Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Saying like, oh, like a raven, she remains cryptic. It's like, yeah, most animals are fucking cryptic. They don't speak.
Yeah.
Boys here, the internet's number one fake history podcast, here to read you another story of a made-up god in a made-up universe. Today we're going to be covering the Raven Queen from Dungeons & Dragons and in hit CRPG Baldur's Gate 3, I think they're mentioned a little bit. This is first requested by longtime patron Chaz, like ages ago, but more recent support from Kayla and Last Peekaboo specifically, more recent patron. Mentioned that playing through Baldur's Gate 3 was much more enjoyable knowing some stuff about the Raven Queen. So I decided to look into it. So cool. thanks for the suggestion, everyone. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer. With me, as always, is Peter and Jamie. Say hi, Peter and Jamie.
Hello.
Hey.
I'm Peter. That's Jamie.
And that's Jamie. I do want to give a quick shout out to new patrons, Turkin and JX O'Malley. Thanks so much for supporting the show, guys, or gals. If you want to become a patron, patreon.com/theloreboys. You can check it out.
Every dollar of your money will be spent on like booze, probably. Maybe some food.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
No, it's such a bad incentive
to stream more. So
yeah, I know.
I'm gonna buy heroin with it. That's all I'm gonna spend your money on is heroin. You'll probably break up my marriage and my family by supporting us on Patreon. So if that's something that you want to do, yes, you're an asshole, but go do it at Patreon.
Yeah, whatever. I put a lot of it into my RRSP, so I don't pay taxes on it.
I also cannot remember if longtime supporter of the show Magnus was shouted out last week for upgrading their membership, or Zach Hogan. So thanks to both of you guys for increasing your support
for
of the show.
Cashola. Yeah.
Sideshow Commissar was the second one there.
Nice. Oh, I've loved that username for a while. That's a great one.
There's some good ones. There's some good ones in the Discord for sure. And if you want to check out the Discord, discord.com/loreboys.
Discord.gg/loreboys. Yeah.
There you go.
You can just point to me anytime you want that one because I'll always get it.
I think discord.com works too. It doesn't. Okay. Oh, no. Tried. Yeah. So it's discord.gg/loreboys. If you want to request an episode like this one, like Chaz did, or if you want us to rate your username, head over to Discord. Join us there.
We're so, rating dicks.
No, we aren't. Don't send them to us. We're not rating them.
Do not post them on the server that has children on
it,
please.
Ban you.
Exactly. We'll get banned.
Also, I delete messages people send us on Instagram, so we ain't rating shit, frankly.
But DM Pete your dick pics. Yeah, so I'm gonna go out on a limb here and assume you guys don't know anything about the Raven Queen. Is that fair to say?
I'm gonna guess she's not a bird. It's probably like a raven themed lady.
Yeah.
And because it's D&D, she might be a elf.
She is an elf. That's very good, Peter. Yeah. Good call. Yeah.
I think that she just loves to just like gush about things. She just loves to talk about things.
Oh, she's a raven queen. Yeah. See, oh, like fuck. Wait a second. It's a raven queen. That would be like a great drag character. So I think he's an elf and he's glued down his eyebrows and has like a big crow, like beehive wig on, but made of crow feathers.
It's why crow feathers are not raven feathers. That's
they're
what
the same
that's
animal.
What I have to wonder. They're not. They're different animals, Peter. A raven and a crow.
I think ravens are crows.
They're
I think
both corvids.
They're both corvids.
They're different animals. A raven
are
is,
they?
huge. So we actually recently out here where I live, we've had ravens recently.
They're that's an like, ill. I've been playing a lot of AC Valhalla. It's an ill omen. You need to like rattle some bones or talk to a seer or something, dude. That's fucked up.
they're like 3 feet tall. Like they're so big. They're
it's like
massive.
A turkey.
So ravens, you can tell ravens apart. So ravens typically travel alone or in pairs. Crows typically travel in groups of like three or more. So
a murder,
if you see
right?
Yeah, if you see more than two, it's never a raven. Ravens croak. They don't caw. Crows will go like caw caw. Ravens gotta go like rrr, rrr, rrr. And you can kind of tell by the spread of their tail feathers. Ravens kind of have this like domed curved look, and crows tail feathers are very square.
I could use me some crow dome.
So the raven queen goes gluck gluck gluck.
Yeah, gluck gluck gluck.
Is that what you just said? Croaks.
It's so funny that you say raven. Like you made the raving pun, because Pete brought it up, like, oh, I assume there's a raven aesthetic. They're super not. At least in, so the source for this entire episode is Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes, which is a fifth edition source book that introduced some like new playable races, some new enemies, things like that, right? So all of this info comes from that source book, and there's nothing in it that like references ravens except for like one minor detail in like the behavior of her and her followers, which we'll get to like near the end of this basically. Okay. Right, but when you
dropping
say
nuts on the
queen,
highway to have a car crap like crush them before, right? Like,
yeah exactly you can train her to bring you a dollar bill for a nut essentially, right?
Ooh. Damn, Baldur's Gate 3 sounds great.
Dollar bill for a nut,
yeah.
That's a steal.
Yeah, so but it's so funny you say Raven Queen, because like there's a lot more themes of her being like very emotional, which we'll also get to at the end, but I think like raving might be like a more apt
okay.
Or well, obviously there is some iconography with like ravens. She does have like raven servants, which we'll get to.
Before we get too far in, I guess I don't have much experience with Baldur's Gate. I went to a friend of the show, Bobby's house, and I opened up the original CDs for the first game, and I read the things like Baldur's Gate is here, and it like guards the, is it the Fae? It's something that has like a weird pronunciation or something. Like, what is Baldur's Gate? Why is it? It's a city.
Yeah, Baldur's
Gate's
a city on the Sword Coast, I think.
Yeah, it's on the Sword Coast, south of Waterdeep. And okay. It's the Candlekeep, which is an infamous like monastic library fortress.
Okay. I remember there being something in the opener of something that had to tell you how to pronounce it. I read this very quickly 6 months ago, so I don't remember exactly, but anyway.
I don't remember what you read either, if I'm being perfect.
Yeah,
so
I thought you might know from the story. It was like something, but anyways.
So we're not going to talking Baldur's Gate. We're talking about the Raven Queen specifically, yeah. Who's a deity in the D&D published pantheon, right? Like she existed before the original Baldur's Gate games, which came out in the 90s, and before, certainly long before this Baldur's Gate 3. She does have two different origin stories at least. So there was one, or sorry, her mortal followers, the Shatterkai, who we'll also talk about today, have a different origin story in fourth edition, where again all our lore is coming from the most recent sources, which is Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes. So it's all fifth edition stuff. So there are some alternate histories. I'm sure there's been like alternate origins for the Raven Queen in the past as well, but we're going to talk specifically about the fifth edition stuff.
Cool. Okay,
so I will start us off with a quote, and this is from High Lady Elustriel Silverhand, as written in Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes. The Raven Queen is trapped by her fascination with the past. She sits in her fortress amidst all the memories of the world, looking at the ones that please her most as though they were glittering jewels. Many great wizards have attempted to understand her motives, but like a raven, she has always remained cryptic, keeping her cache of secrets just out of reach. This is kind of what I was just referencing in like her hoarding of certain things like trinkets and stuff in a very like magpie-esque way. Is I think the only link to her like being a raven that I can really find. I don't even know if ravens do this. I know you can train crows to do it. I know magpies are notorious for doing it.
And they are corvids, so they're part of the same corvids, like
exactly, yeah.
Bird branch, right?
Like, yeah, I don't think blue jays do this for example. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
you
they
could
are
probably,
corvids. That's true.
You could probably train a blue jay to do it, but like I don't know if they just do it naturally, and I don't know if ravens do it naturally. But
yeah.
Saying like, oh, like a raven, she remains cryptic is like, yeah, most animals are fucking cryptic. They don't speak.
Yeah.
but
It's just a raven in an actual crypt, like.
Well, like, also, I was just thinking, it's like, no, my cat is very clear with what she wants. Actually, the least cryptic animal is she wants to make biscuits when she lies on my stomach, mm-hmm. and when she's screaming in the kitchen, she wants food.
Yeah, fair.
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. Cat's not cryptic. Cats are blunt.
I'm still getting to know mine, I guess. Sometimes she's yelling.
When's the last time you saw a raven make biscuits on your tummy? On your tum-tum.
if I wore a nice sweater outside and I covered myself in dollar bills and seeds, maybe.
Those are crows, Peter. You're always doing it with crows.
I think they would make you actual biscuits before making you biscuits in the way a cat would. Like, you just put it like a nut in like a cylinder with like the flour on the other side, and you'll poke it out with a stick.
It needs to preheat the tube to get the dough to rise, to get the seed out off the top.
Exactly. A series of it's like a gold Rube Goldberg seed machine.
I love if Ratatouille was the same movie, but instead under his hat he just had a raven that could not speak, and it was just like actually a very dark and creepy film.
That'd be fun for sure.
I saw an indie game today where you play as a rat and you just have to run around and collect all these little things, and it looked kind of engaging.
Didn't you play like where you were like rats and you had to solve puzzles?
I think Jester bought that for me, and it was just like a really bad Steam game.
But that was a Rube Goldberg game. It was like,
yeah,
ugly rats or something.
Yeah, you have to put like a round barrel on its side, and then like a 2x4, and then drop a rat next to a bowling ball so it goes flying over the fence.
Fantastic contraption.
Bad rats. Yeah.
Bad rats. Awful game. Don't buy it.
So we're surprisingly not talking about Bad Rats the game lore today.
Next week.
But we're talking about the Raven Queen, but we can't start talking about the Raven Queen, leader of the Shatterkai and the Shadowfell, without first talking more generally about elves in D&D, because we've never really covered them.
Okay.
So the elves in fifth edition are direct descendants from the divine. Not the Raven Queen, but the elven god Corallon. So I sent you guys a picture of Corallon in his battle against Grumsh. We'll get to Grumsh in a couple paragraphs here. What you need to know is at the dawn of time, Corallon wandered the universe, dancing their way from world to world and plane to plane. They were a shapeshifter and would often take whatever form fit their fancy. Could be a raven, could be a shifting desert, could be a murmuration of starlings, or a laughing river, or a funny smell that also was a color. Like, they could just take like any shape, essentially, any shape, form, thought they could manifest as an appearance.
This is some hardcore side of a van 80s art.
Yeah, it's fantastic 80s art that I did share with you guys. I think this is official artwork, but I'm not positive. A lot of these figures don't have official artwork, except for one who we'll get to in also just a few little paragraphs here.
What I would
there's too much artwork over.
Yeah, what I would imagine is like normally like a nice, beautiful looking ginger person attacking what looks like an orc or something. Yeah. Her face is twisted into such a grimace of like war while she's slitting this thing's throat, and that she looks scarier than the orc does. Like,
it's their face. They are very specifically like gender fluid, because they take on the form of a fucking laughing river sometimes. So like, they will shift back and forth. And all the artwork you find,
river that laughs, is in fact fluid, gendered fluid, right?
So any artwork you find of Corallon is deliberately androgynous. That's why you see these like rippling muscles, but then also like a feminine hair and kind of feminine stance and hips. You know, like she's got
it's glam
hourglass
like,
figure, like essentially. But
who are poison? Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or a rat.
Yeah,
looks like the ladies that my Instagram reels show me that have the crazy big muscles, but a pretty face.
I'm also on Muscle Mommy algorithm these days. It's not
we're
bad.
All there. We're all there. Okay, we all stand a good Muscle Mommy.
Yeah. Just mewing at the camera, you know.
What is mewing?
It's like it's basically looks maxing your face. So it's like making sure.
I don't know what that means.
It's not a word.
Interrupt me. I was gonna give you two definitions in one. So you're looks maxing your face. So you're like trying to get the angles perfect. Like ideally, your jaw should sit a certain way under your teeth. So usually out forward. Your cheeks get sucked in. You kind of squint a little. I don't have the face for it, but get basically making your face as close to the ideal human alpha Chad face as possible.
The underbite is not
like
Chad.
The Giga Chad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the technique
looks maxing, or is it the
same
thing?
Okay, it's like, well, you're trying to max out your looks, like min maxing. Think of min maxing,
Okay,
and then apply to looks. You're trying
What's
to look. Mewing is the posture of your face to maximize how good you could look to
okay,
be.
So mewing is an aspect of looks maxing.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, you're like this type of face, like, you know, like the Squidward Giga Chad attractive Squidward type face. Yeah.
All I can say is people are fucking lucky. There's no way I can get a nuke. You know what I mean? I'd probably take some servers out or something. So we have at the dawn of time, Corlon, a god at the beginning of time. Essentially, we've covered the creation myth of D&D in the past, way long ago. There's other gods around, but there's no elves, and this is like the one who will give birth to the elves. Essentially, no matter what form Corlon took, all the gods knew them for their mercurial nature. They were constantly changing form. They would not keep an oath, or they would break promises willy nilly. So all the other gods kind of knew, don't trust Corlon too much. They're fickle. If they say something, they might not mean it. They might change their mind down the road.
Don't trust what the river tells you.
Yeah, exactly. All of the gods let Corlon get away with this. They understand it's their nature. They know what to expect anytime they're dealing with the Fair Dancer. All of the gods except for one. That's Grumsh. Like the aforementioned Grumsh. That's Grumsh.
Okay.
Daddy of all the orc gods. So this is like the big orc god and the big elf god, essentially. Okay. The daddy of all the orc gods despises our cute little twink god, and the two decide to go to war. So that picture that I've sent you guys is
the Grumsh who stole Twinkmas. Oh,
no. That's very good. They're both green, so that picture that I sent you is Corlon taking out Grumsh's eye. Grumsh is always depicted as one-eyed because Corlon took out his eye at some point in the distant past. Corlon took some blows as well, and from the blood shed by Corlon during this battle, the first of the elves would spring. Much like Corlon, not as strong, but they were functionally immortal. They reflected many attributes of their progenitor, and they kind of just followed him around for a time, unnoticed by him. So it's like he got slashed by Grumsh's axe, blood spilled, where the blood pooled, beings took shape, and those beings became the first of the elves, and also the first of the elf gods.
Cool.
I see, okay.
So, and when Corlon noticed that he had these twinkling remoras trailing in his shadow, he gave them each a name, not each of them a name, he gave a good portion of them a name, and all the ones that he named became elf gods, and the elf pantheon was born.
Okay.
So these proto-elf...
remoras.
Well, they're literally described as being like, they're made of like stardust or whatever, so they're like twinkling, and they like... live in his shadow.
Yeah, that's
like
that's why you call them a twink. That just sounds like a diminutive of twinkling.
Twinkling. Yeah, twinkling.
He's a little twinkling.
He's a little twinkling. Yeah, someday he'll be a full grown twink.
I can't believe I'm forgetting the name of the artist right now. It is completely. Oh, David Bowie. Never mind. I'm just imagining just a bunch of David Bowies and different David Bowie costumes following around.
Straight up.
Like six inches tall, just like following around this elf god.
Straight up. This 80s hair metal, glam metal elf god, right?
Yeah.
It's David Bowie and Mick Jagger from Dancing in the Street, just doing their dance moves behind.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a hilarious music video, by the way. If you want to see a super homoerotic 80s music video, watch Dancing in the Street with Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
I feel like that would be such a good music video to watch with no music, right? Like if they lifted
just the squeaking shoes.
Just squeaking shoes and kind of just like grunting every now and then, I feel it would be
the moves are so good. We used to do them in high school all the time, and because they're great dance moves.
So these proto elf gods were much like Corlon in their shifting, changing ways, until one of the followers looked at the non-elven gods of the universe and saw the impact their static forms had. So again, Korlan at this point is not really making an impact on the universe like the other gods are. They are creating mortal followers. They are, you know, shaping realms in their image and staking a claim. Korlan's not interested in any of that. They're just kind of like dancing around, flitting from one place to the next,
just
not really caring.
Leaving David Bowie's all over the place.
Exactly. One of the followers of Korlan kind of sees the impact that other gods have and say like, well, I want that for me and my people, right? So she gave herself form and gave herself a name, Lolth. Does the name Lolth ring any bells for you two? This is
Lolth.
Lolth, L-O-L-T-H. This is no. One of the more popular characters in the D&D canon, I guess, as evinced by there being a ton of artwork for her. And I did share a picture of what she will eventually come to look like. She does not look like this just quite yet. She does look just like an elf without form who is going to give herself the form of an elf, essentially.
Oh, horrible spider queen. Okay.
Yeah, so she is going to become like the dark...
Oh, she like dark, the drow queen or some shit?
She's the god of the drow, yeah, essentially. Okay, yeah. And she's about to create the drow. But okay. She does eventually go to the abyss and become a demon queen and takes this spider form, essentially, right?
Okay.
And honestly, doing this, we're not going to talk too much about the drow. We're not going to talk too much about like the traditional elves or anything like that. But if people are interested, it's... there's plenty there, so I could, if you like this episode, let me know and I can do I can do another episode. So I'm going to read you guys a bit of a longer quote here about Lolth. The entity who called herself Lolth spoke to the other new gods and wove an enticing tale of how the elves could attain superiority if only they could relinquish a bit of their individual freedom. Together, united in purpose, the gods could be the vanguard of this effort. Wasn't losing freedom to achieve greatness worth the price? Through this argument, Lolth persuaded the primal entities to take static forms, largely resembling what elves look like today, and thereby turn away from the example of Korlan's wild, ever-shifting ways. As these primal reflections of Korlan changed their nature and defined themselves, they came to see Korlan and Lolth in new lights. They now viewed Korlan as their father, the one who had sired them, and Lolth as their mother, the one who set them on the path to their destiny. Each of the other primal elves, as children will do, favored one parent or the other. Korlan was revolted by this perceived betrayal and railed against Lolth's intrusion. Some of the primal elves rose to her defense. That's a mouthful. I'm sorry. They argued that no entity who sprang from Korlan, no matter how rebellious, should be attacked. Those who remained advocates of Korlan insisted that their sire also wanted greatness for the elves and that such greatness could be achieved if all the primal elves followed Korlan's lead. The primal elves gathered in great hosts around Lolth and Korlan as each entity pleaded its case. At a time when Korlan became distracted and lost in thought, Lolth crept up on him and sought to strike a mortal blow. The elves who favored Korlan helped to blunt the attack, but those in Lolth's camp remained aloof and detached, doing nothing to prevent her onslaught. So, essentially what happens is Lolth convinces, as far as I can tell, all the elves, all the elf gods, and their mortal followers to take static forms. It's only Korlan who remains this shifting shape. There might be one or two of the elven gods who remain or retain a shifting shape, but I couldn't find any mention of like an elf sub race that has this like shifting right. race, like, or the shifting ability feature. Maybe the changelings are like descended from that or something. Would make sense. But so Lolth convinces all of them to take this form. Korlan sees it as a betrayal. Korlan gets mad at Lolth, and Lolth's followers are very much like right-wing political pundits in today's day and age, where they're like, well, you can't hit her, like, we're all sons of Korlan, like none of the children should be struck. And then when she goes to strike him, they all just say nothing. They're like, oh yeah, well that's fine, like she's doing her thing, course. You know what I mean? It was right for me, but not for you.
Well, spider queen wants to beat up the river guy.
Yeah,
I think that's okay.
So Lolth is unable to deal a killing blow, and this would spell the end of the happy-go-lucky days of lounging in the golden lands of Arvindor for the elves. Arvindor is what essentially is Korlan's like home. He didn't necessarily take a huge stake in shaping lands to himself, but it seems like at some point during this time when his children were taking fixed forms, he creates Arvindor, which is elf heaven. When an elf dies, if you lived a good life, you go to Arvindor, essentially.
Sounds like a very rich thing. Like, if you think of Dor as, like, French for gold, you think of Arvin. It almost sounds like Argent, which is, like, money. But I don't know what Arvin would be.
The richest of the chipmunks.
Marvin and the Chipmunk.
his chipmunk children were convinced to take static forms and not just appear as well, Christmas the three, songs.
So Alvin and his brothers appeared from Arvin's flesh when Arvin was cut in his duel against the orc god.
Yeah. And then the songs of the chipmunks created the world around them, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Spider chipmunk queen.
So Loth leaves the land of Arvindor, obviously not allowed to stick around anymore, becomes a demon lord in the abyss. Like I said, with her elven followers who eventually would become the Drow. While Corlan remained the leader of the elves in Arvindor, he would never fully trust his children again. All the mortal elves who had not been named gods were kicked out of Arvindor, dispersing in between the Feywild, the Material Plane, and the Shadowfell, where living creatures live, essentially, right?
Yeah, okay.
So like I said, Arvindor is elf heaven. Like Corlan does not trust any of his children again, is kind of soured on the whole being a father experience, and straight up
I should have just stayed a river, for Christ's sake. This is so much easier. I just go downhill into the ocean. That was my only responsibility.
I was vibing, honestly.
Salmon go up once a year, it's great.
Sperm all in me and then die.
The bears take care of the mess, don't worry about it.
I thought we're paying $1 for next. First a dollar for a nut, not your whole life.
But so he's pretty upset about it, enough that when an elf dies, their soul goes to Arvindor, and they are cared for by the children, the gods who've remained in Arvindor with him. But Corlan himself will never acknowledge an elf soul or give it comfort or succor or anything like that. They're just fuck them all. They're all bad, universally bad. And I assume that's just their fickle nature is they just don't care enough. They don't form attachments like that, I guess.
Fool me once, yeah. I mean, don't form forms either, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They all did take fixed forms. If an elf manages to get to Arvindor, which is one of the outer planes, like Elysium or something, the Abyss is one of them as well.
Yeah.
If you're able to get to Arvindor, Corlan will not tolerate you being, even if you're there to see one of the other elf gods, Corlan will not abide you being there for very long. You'll get kicked out eventually by the progenitor of all the elves.
Okay.
Right.
So this is a period known as the Elven Diaspora. And almost all of the elves would end up in the Feywild after being kicked out of Corlan's realm of Arvindor before they continued onto other planes. So they land in the Feywild first and foremost. Some of the elves remain in the Feywild forever. They're known as the Eladrin. They're Fey elves, essentially. The Drow obviously end up in the Underdark on the Material Plane after following Loth, who went to the Abyss. But most of the elves at this time are still in the Feywild, not just the Eladrin, but essentially all the elves. They go to the Feywild. They like the Feywild for whatever reason. It's kind of bright and fun, I guess, and sparkly they once were.
Pick mushrooms and live barefoot and shit, right?
Yeah, exactly. Real hippie shit. So they all land in the Feywild. Amongst these mortal elves, there is a queen leading a group of Drow who had forsaken their evil ways. So the Drow also have not ended up in the Underdark yet. Okay. Loth went alone to the Abyss. The Drow, will follow her eventually closer to there and end up in the Underdark. But there is a group of Drow who decide, hey, Loth was wrong. Loth did Corlan dirty. And they seek to redeem themselves in Corlan's eyes. It's not going to go well, but they're going to try. So our unnamed queen has a vision board, and at the center of all her yarn strings and pretty little thumbtacks is a lofty goal, to use the souls and magic of her people to elevate herself to a god on par with Corlan and Loth, and to use that influence to try and defrag the Pantheon and reunite all the elves. So, noble goal. She wants mom and dad to get back together, undo the divorce, and she wants to, allow all the elves back into Arvindor.
Parent Trap was about, right? Using your twin, who is also a spider lady, to trick your dad, who is missed currently, and to remarrying your mother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did they get back together in the end?
The evil Spider Queen.
I don't know. I don't remember the movie very well. I know Lindsay Lohan played two different girls.
A
girl that looks like Lindsay Lohan.
What?
They found a girl that looks like Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, it's not her playing herself.
Yeah.
Or her sister, rather.
No, I'm pretty sure it's 2X.
Huh.
Well, I feel like this isn't going to work out, though. Like, you have a bunch of elves go and become drow, go to different planes and stuff or whatever. And, like, yeah, they're different than when they left. I don't think you can just bring them back and everything's fine now. The pieces won't fit back together like they did before. You know?
I mean, we live with the privilege of dramatic irony, knowing that there is an underground spider queen and a race of dark elves.
Yeah, well, I can hear the music, but they can't. It's not digestive or whatever.
Yeah, Ron Howard has just like, I want to go back up to heaven and reunite the elves. It's like, she didn't. Is like, right.
Yeah, the gang ruins all the elves.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look who comes crawling back, you fucking piece of shit.
So I said before, like, her and her followers are drow. Like, they're not drow in the sense of what we know as drow, being these dark elves who follow Lolth and live in the Underdark. It's like they're just of the camp that originally was on Lolth's side and agreed that we should be permanent. Maybe they were like, when Lolth went to strike down Korlan, maybe they thought it was worth it, or maybe they were going to try and stop her or something. We don't know that.
Okay.
But they do disavow the other drow, and they're evil, at least in some way. Here's a quote from Mordenkainen, the mage, written in the margin of Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes. So in some of the source books, you'll get these, like, they'll do what look like margin notes, as if you're reading, like, it's a book that, like, the Tome of Foes is a book is written by Mordenkainen in the it's a diegetic author or whatever. Like, it's in fiction that you can meet this guy, and he has written something called the Tome of Foes, which catalogs all these things, which you can buy in real life as well. I have heard tales of drow who have forsaken the evil ways of their kind. I give these stories no credit, though Elminster himself swears they have validity. Never trust a drow or the word of an archmage. I include this quote just because it's like, it is right in this section. So I think it is very clear that it seems like Morty is referencing modern drow, and the drow who refuted Lolth's teachings in the end likely become something other than drow, which dramatic irony for me. I know that they will.
Traumatic.
Yeah. So when Mordenkainen says, like, I give the stories no credit that a drow could forsake their evil ways, like, they weren't really drow at the time. They were all just elves, and these became different than the drow down the line, right?
Right. Yeah.
Sure.
It's funny. I've been thinking about that, about, like, human history, just playing so much Assassin's Creed, and how I don't like the BC Assassin's Creed games, Origins and Odyssey, because, like, it's 2,500 years ago. The fact that any of these people act in a single, like, scene, anything like a modern human, takes me out of it a lot.
Yeah.
But, like, it's the tough, AD right? stuff, like, hunting Christians as a Viking is just like, yeah, like, I get this much more. Because all this, the Church of England is still around, right?
Yeah.
Shane Gillis tells that story of going to George Washington's house.
It's so fucking good.
Yeah. And there's people who are in character there, but they're slaves. And he's like, no, you don't have to do that, please.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Don't do the voice. I'd give anything for you to not do the voice.
Yeah, exactly. So fucking bad.
So the Queen and her followers do abandon Lolth's really evil ways, but they're pretty morally gray at best. Again, her plan is to siphon the souls of her followers to turn herself into a god, so she can, ostensibly, she says her goal is to make things right and, like, set the pantheon back in order, but it's also like, along the way, you're gonna become a god. That's, like, real fucking nice for you, right?
Yeah, everybody gets to become a god. They all become the singular force, right? She takes all the souls, puts it into
CEO gets richer, thus making me spiritually richer.
Yeah, it's the opposite of Christianity, where she's going to eat all their communion wafers that are their bodies.
it's trickle down Christianity or something.
Trickle up.
I got some bad news about trickle down economics, Pete. It does trickle up.
Oh yeah, well that's of course true. Yeah.
No, they get to become a god.
Here is my body. Like.
So she continues to grow in power by having her followers lend her their magic and their souls. And as she grows more powerful, she attracts more followers. So more people in the Feywild watching what she's doing and seeing, like, oh, wow, she's really doing it. More people are buying in and starting to, you know, joining the cult, essentially.
Leading a cult is such a good racket, dude. I can't believe that.
I've been listening to a lot of Behind the Bastards recently, and it's like, man, the shit that these guys get away with, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
So these followers freely offer her their souls of magic, and she sets herself up with a nice little feedback loop of, I am eating your souls and your magic to get more powerful, and that is bringing me more of you guys to give me your souls and magic. Right. And it seems like it's working. She seems to be on the path to ascension. This group of followers called themselves the Shadar Kai, whom will be the race of elves who do follow the Raven Queen in the future. They hope for their queen's ascension, believing that if she could achieve it, she would be able to reunite all the elves. Again, noble intent. Sounds good, right?
When she takes over both creation and time, she will give our souls back, she said.
Yeah, exactly. She promised.
I wonder what it feels when you're bulking on souls, you know? Do you feel like you don't want to absorb the 10th one that day?
Yeah, souls today. I just like can't do it. I can't do another soul, I swear to God.
I was imagining cracking elves into a raw elf blender. I'm just like...
So I did send you guys two pictures of what Shadar Kai look like. Modern Shadar Kai, they don't look like this at the time, but they will eventually come to look kind of like... They're essentially shadow elves. They'll become shadow elves. Again, kind of treading that line of morally gray, where they're not dark elves and they're not, you know, elf like normal elves.
Physically gray as well.
Yeah, physically gray, morally gray, all that good stuff, right?
They just look like pointier, grayer, hairless humans.
Yep.
Very thin.
But they look like the new Harkonnen from Denis Villeneuve's Dune.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bald, pale, weird, black clothes.
Yeah, less black sweaty. Clothes.
Less sweaty, yeah.
Carrying chains.
Yeah, carrying chains, always. So her plan is simple. Conduct a big old ritual, drain the souls and magic of her followers, and open up a path from the Feywild back to Arvindor. So she's like, we're going. When she gets there...
There's only three steps to the spell, guys. I'm going to absorb your souls and open a portal to heaven.
Yeah, then talk to dad.
Simple enough.
So when she gets there, she says she'll stand before Corlan as a god and bargain to, you know, bring Lolth back into the fold, bring everyone back into the fold, big happy family. Parent Trap. It ends the exact same way that Parent Trap ends. Trust me. I haven't seen it, but I'm pretty sure this is how Parent Trap goes.
I wonder if they get back together. I don't remember.
No, Parent Trap, they must learn the lesson that people can't get back together, or else they're telling all these kids out there with divorced parents that, no, your parents will get back together. You just have to keep trying.
And Mrs. Doubtfire, they don't get back together.
Yeah.
Robin Williams poisons Pierce Brosnan at the shrimp restaurant. And then they remain divorced.
I remember watching the beginning of Parent Trap with divorced parents and being like, what? That's the thing you can do?
You can just find an actress who looks exactly like you, and then you can you can do the trick.
Easy peasy.
So what could go wrong with our little Parent Trap? What could we accidentally trick all our children into thinking that they could get their parents back together just by tricking them? I don't know. I guess we'll find out after the break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back. The Shadar Kai, you'll recall, are gathered around their nameless queen, lending her their souls and magic while she conducts a ritual to open a passage from the Feywild to Arvindor, the home of the creator of the elves, Corlan. Right? You guys remember that, right?
Absolutely.
So while this might be a noble goal, we did highlight that the Shadar Kai are morally gray at best, While many of the Shatterkai believe in their queen and in the goal of unifying the elves, there are those among them who see an opportunity for personal gain. So, to your point, Jamie, like you kind of mentioned, like, oh, the elves won't mix even if we get them back in. Like, they're, you know, they've been made into different things. We're never going to get the chance to find out because they're never going to make it back to Arvin.
Good.
Ship's going to sink on the way. Some Shatterkai wizards were capable of hooking the power lines to the queen's ritual, intent on using the power being given to the queen to run illegal lotto machines in their bar basement, right? So they're tapped into hydro. They are stealing from the queen during her ritual, essentially. No telling how
it's unstable. Something's draining it. You've got like a bunch of like old fat Shatterkai and like mobility scooters just like pulling like video slots.
Yeah, exactly. All hooked up, like plugged into her ass, basically. So the intrusion on the ritual is not noticed for some time. It's not clear how long a ritual like this takes. Like if I was DMing the game, like this is like this ritual takes a year. Like people are just like, you know, there forever. I like the idea of it taking a long time. So I'm gonna say Loreboy's canon. They've been there for like a long time, kind of just like boosting her up, like very Dragon Ball Z powering up a spirit bomb over several episodes, right?
Every
right,
time yeah. I play a campaign with Ethan, he's like, yeah, and then the ritual takes a year, and then we join the sessions for a whole year, and we just have to wait there for the 2 hours every time.
It's a sandbox. You guys can do whatever you want in that year, okay? It's not my fault that there's nothing to do.
It's like, I go to the nearby inn. There's no inns.
Yeah, there's no inns. Dude, you're in the Feywild, okay? There's like the elves just got there, and they immediately got to work on this. Who do you think had time to set up an inn? Jamie,
I look around for an object to pick up.
Dude, you're in the Feywild. You find a pine cone, dude. Great, good job. God. Way to win D&D, Jamie.
All right, I lay down and I chew on the pine cone.
Okay, roll me a d20.
Yeah. Wait, let me roll 20. I want to see what happens to my pine cone.
Okay, let's find out.
One, it shatters into 1,000 pieces and perforates your soft palate.
Yeah,
you get an infection and die.
Roll 1 to 20. Roll a d20. Go. 18.
Oh, well, that's
pretty good. It's a very tasty pine cone.
Awesome.
It's still like clean my teeth seeds on the inside. Yeah, it's not the flaky little seeds on the inside. A squirrel hadn't gotten to it yet.
Exactly. Oh, exactly.
Awesome. Okay, cool. I can't wait for next week.
Well, next week you need utensils to safely eat your pine cone.
So we have these wizards who are leeching power from the ritual intended to give the queen of the Shatterkai more magical ability, to give themselves more magical ability, right? They want to become demigods in their own right. And why not? You see her do again. See, she has this noble goal, but attached to it is a very selfish goal of becoming a god. And others see it and say, like, yeah, she'll still become a god, and she'll still reunite all the elves, and we'll also get more power while she's doing it too, right?
Yeah,
they're literally
it is MLM, right? It is a cult. Exactly, it is. Yeah. It's very, very standard.
It's trickle down Christianity.
It's multi level magic, actually.
Yes. Yeah.
So the intrusion on the ritual is not noticed for some time.
Oh, what's her name? Sorry, what's the god's name again?
She will become the Raven Queen. She's not the Raven Queen yet. She is Lolth, just a queen of the shit. Oh, Lolth, sure.
Yeah, it's multi-Lolth marketing. That's still an MLM.
So the intrusion on the ritual is not noticed for some time, to be fair. Queen had her hands full draining souls, and the rest of the Shatterkai had their hands full having their souls drained.
And stealing energy from her.
Yeah, well, I mean, they the ones doing it probably did notice the intrusion, but
right.
I'm saying the other ones who would have stopped them from doing it didn't notice. But why didn't those burglars arrest conduct a citizen's arrest on themselves while they were robbing the bank? I don't understand it. The queen had made it almost all the way back to Arvindor when she realized
out in the forest, because you can teach certain birds how to talk. Would you think like the medieval version of a guy wearing a wire was the guy who showed up with a parrot?
I mean, I feel like ravens. I feel like you can teach ravens to speak.
Yeah, you can. So. You can teach some of them how to talk, I think. All right, at least I've seen it. Like in the second Ace Ventura movie, there's a talking raven, right? That documentary.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't want your wire like repeating what you're saying as you're saying it, though. You know, like
no, well, that's why you walk in. You have to wear baggy clothes, so the parrot's taped to your chest, and no one can see it, right?
Just picturing like Iago from Aladdin, just like strapped Gilbert Godfrey. You gotta let me out of here.
Hey, we're gonna listen in on the conversation, huh? Look, listen, let me take this parrot and strap it to my chest. But it's the parrot saying that the whole time because I heard you say it earlier.
it's like saying, well, no, you can't reveal that you've got the parrot. Actually, you cannot tell anybody that you're a federal agent. That's a common misconception.
did your shirt just say that?
Jafar's way too thin to strap a parrot underneath his robes. It would just stick up right
flowing
there.
Robes, though. I feel like under the skirt part, right?
If he had taped Iago to his thigh, like his inner thigh, grundle. Under the robe, he probably could have hidden the fact he was wearing a wire the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when those things die, the toucans are their nose. I guess not a parrot, but a toucan. The noses are part of the skeleton, the colorful noses. So their little bird skeletons have that big, colorful beak still in their little tiny hollow bones.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Toucans are neat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, how about three?
Womp womp. I'm gonna let it linger. I'm not getting back on with the story.
All right. I'm comfortable. We can stay here all day.
Okay, so she's mid ritual. She's almost back to Arvindor when she realizes, like, oh, these people are tapping my ritual and stealing my power. Naturally, she's enraged. She decides punishment cannot wait. She lashes out at the thieves, unleashing her wrath on the mid ritual. Unfortunately, she doesn't really understand her own strength at this point. She's mid-ascension. She's basically a demigod or a god, a full god at this point, who is brand spanking new to the whole business, doesn't realize how much juice she has behind that punch. And she, when she turns her focus away from the ritual to these usurpers, the force of her now divine rage takes on an essence of its own, twisting the ritual into something entirely new. So essentially changes the whole ritual into fucking these people up, basically, from teleporting back to Arvindor and her and all her people like she had wanted to do.
Oh, no. It's like, have you ever had a dream that just turns like on a dime?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just reminded me of a dream I had the other night. I don't know if this is a good podcast, but like I was like driving out in the country, like in fields, on like dirt roads and fields, essentially just like driving through fields, and then realized somebody was following me. Then I was in this like abandoned house, like kind of like a Nuketown house, you know what I mean, like clearly not lived in, set up to look like it was lived in.
Thanks for putting in Call of Duty terms for us so we could all imagine it.
Okay. Or like the towns that they built in the desert that like Nuketown and from Call of Duty is based on, right?
Yeah, of course.
Where it's just like this like mannequin house or whatever, right? Where I knew in my heart of hearts no one was living there, but then I was like hiding out from these people in this place, and I was like creeping around the house, and it was such a turn from like having so much fun, like just like driving on country roads through some fields to like, man. Oh shit, people are chasing me, I gotta hide in this house. Like,
oh my god,
dude,
no reason for it.
Just why remind that me. Dream? I had a dream one time where I was walking on a nice, like, nature-y trail, and then a lion man was full-on chasing me. And I was running from the lion man, and I woke up.
Courage.
Yeah, he had courage. It was so scary. It was a human with a mane, and he was fucking fast. And he was coming for me, and he got me, and I woke up. Yeah. Anyways, dreams, what do they mean, man?
There's a classic Extra Fabulous comic. He's like a webcomic artist. I embezzled funds to support his Patreon for a while. You guys may remember.
Oh, right. That guy.
He has a comic, which is like, there's a guy and he's like nervously looking in his, like, he's driving his car and he's nervously looking in his like side view mirror, like looking in the mirror or whatever. And there's just like a distant figure of like a person running behind him. And then it says like objects in mirror are closer than they appear. And then it gets closer to the guy and he has a shirt that just says fast guy. It's just your fucking fast lying guy reminds me of that. so the Queen of the Shatterkai realizes her error after the ritual begins to change, though she doesn't have the knowledge of her own power that she would need to stop it and like turn it back into what it should be, right? If such a thing is even possible, if reversing her rage at this point was even possible, we don't know. The river had pushed over the edge of the cliff and the waterfall is coming, basically.
Okay.
She tries to tear the magic of the ritual off of herself, seeing too late what was coming. She draws on what remains of the now tattered souls of the Shatterkai, pulling them to her to try and cut the binds of the magic, now piercing her. They were flung through the plains, landing not in Arvindor in the loving embrace of the being whose blood they were made from, but instead in the Shadowfell. So we've done a whole episode on the Shadowfell. We very
creepy stitched up eye guy, like the crossroads dude, right?
Exactly. That's when you get to the Shadowfell. That's like the first person you meet. Essentially, we talked very briefly. The Shatterkai are prominent denizens of the Shadowfell. The Raven Queen lives here now, and I don't. We didn't talk very much about either of these things. I assume I said at the time, I'll do an episode on the Shatterkai someday. 3 years later, here we are. Huh?
Here we are.
So I did send a picture of what the Shadowfell looks like. It's when we talked about the Shadowfell, when the material plane or when the material plane was created, some bits were too bright and some bits were too dark. The bits that were too bright spun off to form the Feywild. The bits that were too dark spun off to form the Shadowfell. So both are have like the Feywild and the Shadowfell have very intense ties to emotion in that you know, emotions can get amplified by just being there. Essentially, you can get like euphoric highs or like really bad lows, and the Shadowfell seems to be more tied to kind of like pervasive emotions. Like you don't change quickly, but you kind of just get like these feedback loops where your emotions get stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, and you never really break out of it. Whereas in the Feywild, it's much more changing all the time.
Someone's dad watching the news at night just to get angrier and angrier. They've got litter boxes at schools.
Yeah.
I fucking dead. I thought this was America.
Yeah, exactly. That's the Shadowfell.
They've been siphoning off her magic to fill litter boxes at schools. Yeah. So she turns around and freaks out.
Left Twitter is the Feywild, which is like equally as bad in that it is just chaotic and constantly like rotting your brain, and you're switching from one thing to another just like way too fast, right?
Oh god.
I say left Twitter, just Twitter's bad, I guess, but
oh yeah. No,
yeah, it is.
You hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah. And we say Fox News, but CNN fucking sucks too. So
oh dude, it's on at the gym. They got a hardcore kill 'em all policy these days. It's fucking crazy, dude.
Yeah. They're all bad.
Yeah.
So the queen of our Shatterkai killed instantly on arrival. Her skin flensed from her bones, her mind shattered by the overwhelming magic flowing through it. From the devastated mind of this queen of the Shatterkai, coupled with the lingering magical energy, the Raven Queen is born. So, born from the soul of this queen of the Shatterkai, essentially.
Okay, right. I'm sure she's very stable, being the hastily reassembled parts of a shattered god.
Yeah, super not. Super not. So it's a rough end for our queen, for sure. But the wizards who interrupted her ritual don't get off much easier. Here's another quote from Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes. When their ritual failed with catastrophic results, the wizards in the consortium were pulled into the Shadowfell along with the queen and the Shatterkai. But their misfortune didn't end there. Their former queen arose from the center of a maze of ash and let loose a scream of ebb and smoke that penetrated the flesh and minds of the wizards, turning their bones black and lacerating their souls.
Ugh.
The cries of agony merged with her own, and when her scream faded, the wizards had been mutated and warped into the scabrous, vulturous creatures known as Nagpas. Now they wander the plains as wretched monsters, marked forever by the Raven Queen's curse and banished from her presence. So I did send you guys a picture of what a Nagpa looks like. Very similar to the evil creatures in
Dark Crystal?
Dark Crystal. I was like, Forgotten Crystal? Lost Crystal? Dark
Crystal.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They look like, what the fuck are they? The Skeksis. They look like that. The
Skeksis, exactly. Yeah. They're, you know, battered roads.
Hunchback Vulture Man.
Hunchback Vulture Man.
They can walk for miles without needing to consume any evil, because all the evil's in their hump.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the Shatterkai, having landed on the Plane of Shadow, did their best to get their bearings while their queen turned people into birds and screamed a bunch. They watched as their queen banished the newly created Nagpas and struggled with the grief of
it's
all
a
that
living.
Had happened. In trying to restore her followers to their place at their god's side, she had seen her kingdom destroyed, she had been betrayed, and she had failed at attaining true divinity. Again, the Raven Queen does rise from the soul of the queen of the Shatterkai and seems to be like there is a fragment of the Shatterkai. Or of the Shatterkai Queen that is present within the Raven Queen, I believe. But it's not just her. Like, it's not just her soul that forms this. So it's kind of like the Raven Queen has this one core memory, which defines kind of her creation, which is like the memory of being betrayed, failing at divinity because she died and her soul was destroyed. And then something else moves into the place to take over. and become the Raven Queen. So it's like,
or it's
she
like
failed.
Reassembled wrong in some capacity, yeah, right?
Exactly. With like, they do borrow like other pieces, and we'll get into it a little bit, but like there's pieces of the Shadowfell itself which are part of the Raven Queen in the restructuring of her, essentially.
And they put her back together. Like, where do they put this colorful beak? Just toss it away. Must have been an extra.
It's just toucan bones. Like, yeah. throw with the toucan bones. Come on. all the Shadow Kai coming to give her gifts. They all brought the same gift, which is just more toucan bones.
Just a bunch of toucan skeletons. Oh, a toucan skeleton. Thank you.
Oh, wow. I've never seen this before. So she wallows in sorrow, and all the while the lingering magics of the ritual continue to tear at her, to break her and remake her 1,000 times over. The Raven Queen was broken down to something made entirely of symbols, shredding her physical form completely. This seems to be where the ravens like take the most place, is that sometimes she just appears as like a flock of ravens, I guess, because okay. She is just symbols. She doesn't have like a physical body anymore.
Like a hi-hat and then a bunch of ravens.
Exactly, yeah.
They're breaking and reassembling her. Breaking her and reassembling her. It's like when you have to make pasta from scratch and you have to keep folding the dough over it, rip it apart, over it, and you got to form enough gluten to get a raven board.
Exactly. Get the gluten in there. Now that's
pure,
some digestive.
Pure Nihon noodles folded 1,000 times.
So to try and hold on to any sense of self, she pulls from the land around her, using what remains of her power to pull in pieces of the Shadowfell, becoming entwined with this plane of melancholy. Like, there's no other ways to describe it. Like, this is a sad, sorrow filled place.
That's my kind of full name from now on.
Melancholy. She's so spunky, though. She's kind of accidentally turned herself. I forgot the David Bowie god, who is also kind of like a formless, ethereal thing who appears as like a river or whatever. She still got there, but went in the wrong direction, right?
Yeah.
She took three left turns.
Yeah, it didn't even occur to me at all, but you're totally right. She does like loop back in on what like Coraline's original vision for for their children was, right?
Oh, on the subject of Fox and CNN, she's very much just horseshoed herself back to the exact same horrible place. Yeah.
So in doing so and pulling the Shadowfell into herself, she does manage to cement herself as divine, as a god, but at immense personal cost for the fragmented mortal soul of the Elven Queen who once was. Right. What remains, if anything, of that soul is like echo, essentially. Again, like there's some hints of it, but it's really not there. She's really not the same person. Okay. While over centuries, the thoughts, feelings, and memories of the Shadowfell itself have coalesced into the deity known as the Raven Queen. So it's kind of just like the sentience of the plane, the memory of like things that have happened here is the Raven Queen.
Cool. Okay, cool.
I have another quote for you guys. Since achieving divinity, the Raven Queen has filled her realm with shadows and memories, obsessively collecting such essences from remnants of dead gods and mortals that were strewn throughout the Shadowfell. From these metaphysical fragments, she formed her new home, a twisted castle that the Shadar Kai called the Fortress of Memories. The fortress is a mournful place filled with incessant echoes of the past. Flocks of ravens that act as her eyes and ears darken the skies around it when they emerge from within, bearing her cryptic messages and omens far and wide across the multiverse. Within the Fortress of Memories are trinkets and items that the Raven Queen finds irresistible, memories plucked from people's past that have been invested with deep feelings of pain, sorrow, longing, guilt, or remorse. These items are brought to her as gifts from the Shadar Kai. These trinkets can include furniture, clocks, mirrors, jewels, and toys. Also appearing in the fortress are ghostly visions of people, places, and pets. Any of these things can spontaneously appear about her lair, every object and apparition being a metaphoric representation of some story, great or small, that was saturated with raw emotion.
Love that. Cool. I would love if it was like all just not like horribly painful memories, but just like really innocent, embarrassing ones, like a voice crack at a spelling bee or something. Oh, yeah. You're walking through a hall and it's like inconvenience.
Yeah.
And see, echoes through the halls.
Or it's like, because obviously we established that ravens and crows are different. You know, like instead of the deep like honk that it makes, it's like caw voice, like puberty voice cracks.
Yeah.
when it's trying to be like ominous.
Yeah.
Caw. Oh. Bunch of acne all over its beak, just like caw.
So this is all like the raven symbology I can find. Again, like this is like as much as it goes for me that I could see, at least in this entry of Mordekai and Stone of Foes, is like she likes to collect things, which again, I don't know if ravens do that. I assume they do. They're corvids, so they probably do on some level at least.
Magpies do. It's kind of like conflating the behavior of like the entire species or that branch of the bird tree, right?
And ravens will at least gift us like little shiny things they find. So I'd imagine they value them themselves, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
they're incredibly intelligent. I know that. So they do like organize and like scheme and like learn and use tools. I think they're the only birds who use tools. I could be completely wrong about that. Somebody I can try and pull.
I know
up that
ravens
clip.
Do. I know corvids can. All there's, like I think corvids can use tools.
There's a video that I have of a local dog park that I go to, and no joke, there was 50 ravens there. Or I'm not sure if it was ravens or crows. Ravens are crows
probably
are crows. Pack.
Ravens
crows
are huge, yeah. And they don't typically travel in big groups.
There was like 50 of them there, and I was like, why are there so many fucking crows here? And I look, and down in the field below, there's a guy who feeds them, and he starts feeding them, and then one of them goes up and starts cawing. And they're coming from everywhere. And like in this video, I could see 50 of them, but there was literally 100 crows around. Like, and they're just so like, cool.
I see a silhouette from a distance. Crows. It's like the silhouette of a man on a park bench, and you approach it, and it just dissolves into crows. Just that the paper bag full of seed topples over.
Saucy took credit for it. He says he sent them my way, but I know the real truth. But I looked it up. You can feed them. And anyone want to start a band of crows yourself? So you can become a crow lord or a raven lord. You can get bird feed works, whole eggs. Offer them an egg in a trying time. And
really?
Yeah.
Is it like a boiled egg? Like, do I have to peel it? Or
I think you could just give it. I think you can give it fresh. Yeah. They probably
steal like 10 today. I have a turkey egg that my aunt gave me that's just fucking huge. I haven't boiled it yet.
Oh, wow.
Maybe we'll give that to a crow.
Yeah, why not? Give your local crow an egg.
A crow an egg.
Give back.
Yeah, they'll bring you some presents and embarrassing memories.
This is the but this is what I was saying earlier, Jamie, when you made the joke about the Raven Queen. Like, she's obsessed with feelings of pain, sorrow, longing, guilt, and remorse. Like, it feels like she probably has some manic moments where she probably goes a little raving mad, right?
Yeah.
Has a little manic Monday,
Does she know why a raven's like a writing desk? Are we going to get to that point or no?
I mean, I assume she does, but again, ravens are cryptic, so she'll never tell.
Right.
So even though they're bound for all time by the ritual to serve the Raven Queen, the Shatterkai do generally fear her. They do not dwell inside the Fortress of Memories, for most of them are rightfully terrified of the place. They understand that she's like a little offset, but they do serve her. All of the Shatterkai appear old and withered when they're in the Shadowfell. The ritual draining their souls has left them permanently stripped of the traditional beauty standards enjoyed by other elves. So all other elves, like, elves don't age. When an elf gets to the end of their life in fifth edition, elves also don't sleep. They enter a trance every night for like 4 hours. When an elf is nearing the end of its life, during their trance, they'll get like crescent moon shapes in their eyes, and that's how they know they're going to die soon. They never age like in any way. They never get older at all. But the Shatterkai all look permanently older when they're in the Shadowfell, because you see what the ritual that the queen had undertaken cost their souls. Is it
gotta be a waning moon, eh? Waning, not waxing.
Yeah, you don't want to get wax in your eye.
No, you get waxing moon at a spa.
Well, waning is like the moon fading away, right? So that's when they would fade away, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So ashamed of not being true pretty boys, they often wear masks of metal or wood, and these are almost always melancholic in their design, so they're leaning into the Shadowfell aesthetic. The Shatterkai don't go full emo for no reason. They're pretty upset about losing their civilization and getting banished to the Shadow Realm. One thing they've got going for them, which might lend to cutting wrists and blacking eyes, is that they know that death is not the end for them. While other elves, when they approach the end of their life or die from mortal wounds or something like that, their souls go to Arvindor. They're eventually reborn as something else. We won't get into it.
Okay.
Whenever a Shatterkai dies, their soul does not go back to Arvindor like the other elves. Instead, it is ensnared by the Raven Queen, who returns them to the Shadowfell and resurrects them to serve her once more.
You wake up and the guy on the sign's there again, and you got to do it all the fucking over again.
Shit. Here we go again.
It's roguelite life, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
So they come to know the new incarnation.
Oh, shit, here we crow again. Sorry.
Oh, very good. Very good. they come to know the new incarnation of their queen and just how emotional she can be. The Raven Queen is fascinated by mortal emotions, and when one visits her in the Fortress of Memories, the Shatter Kai will do their best to prepare the solicitors. So they kind of serve as like stewards to her, and like if you wanted to visit the Raven Queen, you would like go through the Shatter Kai and deal with them, and they would be like, oh yeah, you know, she gets a little emotional, probably gonna, you know, like root around in your head and find your deepest, darkest memories and kind of bring them to the forefront of your consciousness when you're in with her, you know.
Oh, so they're not awful, evil, right? It's just goth dimension. It's like kind of sad.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Not. I don't think evil. Probably can be an argument made, but
there's an alignment chart in D&D. Where do they go?
I don't think playable races get alignments anymore, but.
Oh, okay.
There's definitely some
neutral.
There's definitely some monsters that are Shatter Kai. So maybe
she is lawful neutral, apparently.
Lawful neutral.
The Raven Queen is, I think, for sure. Yeah. Again, like soulmonger. So yeah, typically neutral evil. So they range neutral evil probably, right? So
right.
They're definitely not good, I think is fair to say. But they live in a hard place, so I think maybe some of it is forgiven for that.
Yeah, I mean, like showing up to a house and having someone root through your head like it's a file cabinet, just to bring out your strongest emotions sounds like quite a trip. Like maybe if you needed to deal with them, it'd be good at bringing them to the forefront. I wonder if she brings the strongest like happy moments or the strongest like nostalgic moments or only is it just pain, suffering, embarrassment, all that stuff.
It's definitely
it's like an ayahuasca retreat for like rich white people, basically.
Yeah. Yeah,
going to the Shadowfell, you get to whatever. Talk to this whirring torrent of birds and throw up on the floor.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit your pants. So the Shatter Kai warn visitors of how powerful emotion is in the Shadowfell and in the presence of the sovereign who is entwined with it.
Sora, that'd be a cool T-shirt. Sorry, what? I shit myself in Shadowfell.
I mean, we got a merch store.
I'll put it with Skittery Little Fuck Freak. That one's in the pipeline.
I went to the Shadowfell and all I got was shit in my pants.
So, I cried and shit and farted.
So sorrow in particular is a powerful emotion to the Raven Queen, as one that reminds her of the string of failures that heralded her creation.
Okay.
The Raven Queen is known to give adventurers who visit her a test, one made from their own psyche. So here's another quote for you guys. Because the Raven Queen has godlike power, she can put an adventuring party inside a demiplane that is created from the psyche of one of the characters. On entering the Fortress of Memories or encountering the Raven Queen, a character can find themselves transported to a strange fairy tale world pulled from their experiences, filled with metaphors, parables, and allegories, all of which challenge that character's frailties, fears, and desires.
They're going to throw us into Lion Man world, dude. Exactly. You guys are going
to
meet
up. You're going to go to your dreams, dude. We're all going to Lion Man world. I love that Half-Life level. We don't go to Lion Man world. So a lot of people don't return from their own psyche. Like they just get trapped in there, never pass their tests, and they get stuck in Lion Man world, getting chased by Freddy Krueger and the Lion Man teamed up.
Yeah. I was just thinking of just like Jordan Peterson, who's just like goes to Russia to go into his Raven Queen coma and comes back completely insane.
Behavior Interactive didn't get the IP for Lion Man from me, so it's actually going to be more of like a cat person, but it'll be
of course. Yeah.
So on entering her realm, you'd most likely be confronted with at least a glimpse of your own internal monologue, if not the full test itself. The Raven Queen tends to probe deep into the minds of those pilgrims who make their way to her domain, obsessed as she is with memory and emotion, to draw forth the deepest buried thoughts. To your point, Jamie, I don't think it's exclusively sorrow. Like, I think those are the memories she's drawn most to. I think anything powerful enough, she would probably check it out at the very least, right?
Love, whatever. Love, sadness, fear.
Horniness.
Running from the Lion Man.
running from the Lion Man. On Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's at the bottom.
From Lion Man. Before you can love, you have to escape the Lion Man. Which is why I'm still single. I haven't
He's there. He's always there, just in your peripheral vision.
Yeah. I befriended the Lion Man. That's how I found love.
Oh, that's how you got married.
Yeah. So most people don't understand. I mean, nobody really understands why she's like this. Many scholars do believe that she's playing 5D chess, that she has some game afoot that she is playing out to achieve some ultimate unknowable goal. Others believe that in delving into mortal souls and getting a glimpse of the sweet soul fruit, she is reminding herself of her former mortality. I got a quote to round us off here. Some wizards and other scholars have speculated that the Raven Queen is simply insane, that there is no method to her madness other than a nervous pecking apart of a psyche with no more motive than a curious child pulling the legs off an ant. Others have speculated that the Raven Queen needs the gravity of emotions to hold her eternally decaying identity together. But a few sages have postulated that the Raven Queen's purpose is of greater importance, that she serves as a filter of sorts, cleansing souls that cling to fear and pain, forcing them to confront their unfinished business so that they are freed of their mortal baggage and can rise to explore higher planes of existence. What she's up to, ultimately, is going to be up to your dungeon master in the campaigns that you're playing, right?
Oh.
They definitely leave it. You never find out what the Raven Queen's plan is because you're going to build a campaign around what your Raven Queen's plan is. So that was our episode on the Raven Queen and the Shatter Kai. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, consider leaving a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice and telling your friends about the show. It's how we continue to grow. So thanks so much, everyone, who has continued to do so far. Pete, do you want to talk about Instagram?
At Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram. I've got a comic coming out soon. I'll probably shift my process of drawing in the morning and playing Assassin's Creed at night because my cat gets very annoying in the evening and kind of delays things. But I'm still on track for... We're not sure how we're going to sell the fucking thing. But you could probably read it if you had eyes and my email address around Valentine's Day 2024. I think I'm still on track. I worked tirelessly all week. On weekend, this weekend, probably about like close to 14 hours total of coloring work that I did this weekend. And doing the big color layers first felt daunting. And I was like, I'll never fucking finish this in a million years, guys. But after coloring in an entire base layer of somebody's like skin color, clothing color and everything, and now all I'm doing is like accessories, you just color in like, oh, the sheriff's badge takes a second and a half. And then you just do that 50 times and that whole thing. Whatever.
That's one week from release day today, actually. Yeah. So the next time you get the audio, we should have made good progress in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I know. Like the behind the scenes little tidbits I give aren't the most thrilling thing on the planet. I guess I'm just like, hey, it's hard.
Yeah. I'm just pissed you're talking about your cat and how to color when I want to plug my stream and everyone's turning everything off right now. But
I know, I'm sorry.
No, it's good.
Go ahead, Jimbo.
Yeah, twitch.tv/loreboysjames.
Oh,
don't
sorry.
Do that, dude. It sucks. Lord Boy James, if you tune in tomorrow, it will be my fourth stream. Come give me a follow. We're going to get my sub button. Love to see you there. It's been lots of folks hanging out. If you want more Lore Boys, sometimes you'll catch them in the chat and you'll always catch me on stream. So Tuesdays, Thursdays, 8 p.m. EST.
Yeah. And if you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon, patreon.com/thelorboys. We offer some bonus audio. We offer, you know, we do some polls sometimes on what topics to cover coming up next. And you get a fancy name in the Discord at discord.gg/loreboys. So check it out if it's something that you can afford and you want to support us. It really means the world to us, all the people who do. And of course, if you don't trust Patreon, we do have Loreboys Prime. We are actually holding, I'm going to be holding some open auditions. There's no limit on the number of people I'm going to recruit. I need you to send me a picture of you wearing a mane and
oh, no.
A video of Fast Chicken Run.
Oh no.
And I'm just planning a little surprise for some of the other boys on this podcast, or maybe one of the other boys on this podcast. Okay.
Sounds so like a video of you doing a beep test in a lion costume and then we'll talk.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Sounds like I start working on my cardio Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm streaming on Tuesday, Thursday. The lion man's coming.
The lion man coming. and I think that would constitute a
lore boys
being chased by lion man.
Lore boys being chased by lion man.
What the fuck? Ooh. Ethan he did it again.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.